Today is an anniversary BP would rather forget.
A year later, the British oil giant is still paying.
Marketplace Midday Update is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. Thanks for downloading the podcast from Marketplace.org. It is Wednesday, April 20th.
Coming up behind the scenes before S&P downgraded the U.S. debt outlook to negative. President Obama is looking for friends at Facebook headquarters today.
Plus, how high can high-tech profits go? And hotels can now keep track of their towels. All that ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
1 year ago to the day, one of the oil wells BP operates in the Gulf of Mexico blew out and burned. 11 crew members were killed. And since the oil spill, BP has paid out billions of dollars, and other big bills are coming. One of those bills is for the damage to natural resources. But how do you put a price tag on nature? From the Sustainability Desk, Marketplace's Adrian Hill reports.
The criminality of what has happened.
Public hearings can be deadly boring.
Unbelievable.
Distrust.
But not when you've got a room full of frustrated Louisianians like Clint Guidry with the ear of the federal government.
You people come down and you get public opinion, and then you go back up to Washington and just do whatever the hell you want to do, you know? And I just don't think that that should be done this time.
Another guy got up and asked for
less studies, more money.
Sort of like that country song. A little less talk and a lot more action. But coming up with a bill for damaged natural resources is going to take a while. The government needs to charge BP for everything from dead pelicans to lost days suntanning on the beach. And to do that, it has to figure out what to charge. Valuing nature, as you might expect, is tricky. Kevin Kirsch helps out on natural resources damage assessment with NOAA.
As we go through our assessment, we don't come back and say, this dolphin is worth X amount of dollars.
If the government is looking to charge BP for dead dolphins, it might write the bill for improving dolphin habitat. If it needs to charge BP for lost days sunning on the beach, it might write a bill to create more tanning parlors. No, just kidding. But the government might actually ask BP to build boardwalks to access the beach or help with coastal restoration projects. John Iliff is also with NOAA. He says the first step in the process is to measure loss, then figure out what restoration is needed to offset that loss, then get public input, and then
with a final restoration plan, we present that to BP. If BP says no, we have to go into litigation and take it to the courts.
It's still very early in the process. And so the real action of restoring the Gulf's natural resources is still a whole lot of talk away. I'm Adrian Hill for Marketplace.
A little later in our program, so much oil in the Gulf, yet not enough to study.
President Obama arrives in California today for some fundraisers and a town hall meeting at Facebook headquarters. Political analysts say social networking will play an even bigger role in the campaign this time around. Marketplace's Steve Henn is with us now from Silicon Valley for more on that. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
So is this all about fundraising through social networking at this point?
I don't think the visit to Facebook is all about fundraising. What the campaign is trying to do at this point is build the kinds of lists and engagement it had last cycle in 2008. So if you log on to barackobama.com, the first thing it asks you to do is sign in using your Facebook account. If you do, then you're asked to send messages to all of your friends one at a time and ask them to join the campaign as well. So this is really about sort of building that kind of community engagement and, you know, for the Obama campaign, they're hoping the same kind of enthusiasm they had 4 years ago.
Now, Steve, if we look back at the last couple of big election cycles, in 2004, there was no YouTube, if you can believe it. In 2008, Twitter was just a baby. You cover the new trends in Silicon Valley. What's going to change the election this year?
Well, I think one of the biggest changes is the scale of all the social networks, but also the scale and penetration of smartphones and the apps that they have. A friend of mine worked in campaigns in Iowa a decade ago, and she was all excited about sending people door-to-door with PDAs. Remember those old-school gadgets, Palm Pilots? Well, they could store lots of detailed information about voters. Now, with apps, you'll be able to put detailed voter information, if you care to, in the hands of anyone who has signed up and volunteered for your campaign. So I think that could be one of the biggest changes that I'm going to watch.
Marketplace's Steve Henn in Silicon Valley. Thanks, Steve.
Sure thing.
Today, the International Monetary Fund's chief economist told a French newspaper, Le Monde, the U.S. lacks a credible plan to cut its deficit over the medium term. Now, that comes just a couple of days after ratings agency S&P issued a negative outlook on U.S. debt.
Well, a story in this morning's Washington Post has some interesting behind-the-scenes information on that S&P downgrade. It says the Obama administration spent weeks privately urging S&P not to issue a negative outlook on U.S. debt. Richard DeKayser is an economist with the Parthenon Group in Boston, and he's with us right now, as he is each Wednesday. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
Well, tell us what you make of this news.
Well, you know, Jeremy, this is about the 80th time that the debt ceiling has been renegotiated, and it's usually a very perfunctory affair, but when budget debate is intense like it is now, things tend to flare up. Now, the administration's role is to calm nerves. They don't want to see foreign investors get spooked. They don't want to see higher interest rates. So I view all of this as part and parcel of pulling out all stops to defend the integrity of U.S. debt and the U.S. dollar. So we've been seeing, in particular, the Treasury Secretary making speeches, providing interviews, trying to calm nerves. And I think this jawboning of S&P was simply one aspect of that full-court press. And it's hard to say in the end whether he's been successful or not, but the results have certainly been very favorable. Bond yields have not changed since S&P's outlook was announced on Monday, and that's certainly for the good.
Richard DeKayser, economist with the Parthenon Group, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Take care.
Later today, we get a profit report from Apple, part of a slew of tech earnings that have come out this week from Intel, IBM, Yahoo, and others. Those tech companies have done pretty well, and if Apple follows suit, that could spell even better news for the overall economy. Marketplace's Janet Babin is with us now to talk about it this morning. Hi, Janet.
Good morning, Steve.
Where are tech companies making all this money?
Well, increased demand for cloud computing. We hear that word a lot, and what it means is companies have a great need for corporate data centers that can store and retrieve information securely online. And, you know, whether it's our ATM transactions to what someone bought at the supermarket, companies store and retrieve this online data, and they do it from these so-called data storage farms or clouds. And IBM saw increased demand for its corporate data servers and for computer hardware. Also, tech firms are making money from gadgets like smartphones.
Of course. Does this mean anything for the broader recovery, Janet, or is it just good news for Silicon Valley?
Well, it could be proof, Steve, that technology is driving a broader recovery here. Yankee analyst Carl Howe explains it this way. Business technology needs are increasing, and this is largely happening because of consumer demand. Here he gives us an example of strong consumer brand, one you probably know, Facebook.
Facebook just built one of the largest data centers in the world. We think of that as a consumer company, but I can tell you for the Taiwanese manufacturers that are building the computers that go into that data center, that looks like a big business-to-business transaction.
So Howe's making a bigger theoretical point here, Steve, that to become separate, it used to be separate, the consumer economy and the business economy, but now he says one is really driving the other, and it's all resulting so far anyway this year in a tech-driven overall broader recovery.
Okay. Marketplace's Janet Babin. Janet, thanks.
Thank you.
Wells Fargo said today its profit went up in the last quarter. And meanwhile, today, Spain easily sold about $5 billion worth of long-term debt. Steve, of the so-called pigs nations, Portugal, yeah. Ireland, Greece, and Spain, Spain is the only one that has not asked for a European bailout just yet.
Yet.
Well, for more numbers, you can check out our numbers section anytime at marketplace.org.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
Now to the Marketplace global perspective. Today we learned Japanese exports fell in March for the first time in more than a year. Last month's earthquake and tsunami, of course, to blame for that, and shipments of Japanese cars to other countries fell dramatically. We continue our coverage of the human and of the economic toll now with the BBC's Roland Burke, who joins us from Tokyo. Hi, Roland.
Hi.
So this is all about the tsunami and quake damaging factories and slowing supplies?
Yes, that's right. If you think of Japan, you think of the big, sophisticated companies. But the process of making things like cars begins with small, often family-run factories. They make the components that go into the cars. And of course, along the northeast coast, they've been destroyed by the earthquake and tsunami. In other places, production has been slowed by electricity shortages. So that has broken supply chains, and we're seeing the result of that in the export figures.
I'm curious, Roland, are American manufacturers picking up the slack here?
Well, there certainly is potential for that. And in the long run, there'll be room for American manufacturers to come in for the rebuilding with things like wood, machinery to rebuild houses. But remember this too, Japan also supplies American companies and factories in the United States. So we've seen Toyota is going to have its factories in North America closed on Mondays and Fridays up until June. Even a company like Harley-Davidson, a company that seems to be iconically American, well, that needs some Japanese components too, so they're affected as well.
The BBC's Roland Burke in Tokyo. Roland, thank you.
Thank you.
France and the UK said today they'll send military advisors to Libya in hopes of helping rebels there topple the country's dictator. Meanwhile, the international community is working to freeze the assets of the Gaddafi regime. But banks have had a tough time tracking those assets because the money's under an Arabic name that can be spelled many different ways in the West. Marketplace's David Gurra reports.
Take the Arabic name Muammar Gaddafi. In English, there are dozens of ways to write it, because there's no standard way to transliterate Arabic into English. So banks, which must comply with government-imposed sanctions, use computer programs that rely on fuzzy logic.
The ability for software to detect not only the alternate spellings, but any deliberate misspellings or phonetic spellings that are used by an individual in attempting to defeat the filters.
That's Michael Dawson, a compliance expert with Promontory Financial Group. But there's more to this than spelling. Bertrand Lisbach is a Swiss software developer.
To really achieve a good quality in the matching, which means a precise and a reliable matching, you actually need a lot of linguistic research.
Banks and investigators are getting more sophisticated, upping their game just as the number of deposed despots from North Africa and the Middle East increases. In Washington, I'm David Gurra for Marketplace.
Well, Steve, do you know what the new big thing is?
There's another big thing?
There's a new big thing.
It's always
and
a big thing.
Today it is adult bar mitzvahs and bat mitzvahs.
Oh,
yes,
that's
right.
Nice.
Why?
I thought you had to be a kid to get one of those.
Usually
no?
You do. You have to be about 13 years old in the Jewish religion. But now you can go through the rite of passage at age 22,
for
23 years old for a second time.
Yeah.
Except not the religious part of it, just the party. You just have the big party with the party favors and the DJs and the Macarena and the, you know, all those things. That's what people are doing apparently now. According to a story in the Boston Globe, people are doing this with postmodern irony.
Oh.
And one rabbi told the Globe, yeah, it's all well and good that we've got this new trend, but it'd be nice if these people would show up at synagogue once in a while.
We mentioned earlier in the program, it's been a year since the Deepwater Horizon rig exploded in the Gulf of Mexico and leaked at least 5 million gallons of oil into the Gulf. But as Marketplace's Eve Troe reports, many scientists still don't have samples of that oil to help them measure the impact.
When the rig exploded, LSU biologist Andrew Whitehead realized he needed to get samples fast.
Before the oil got there. And it's actually very rare to have before event data.
He used his own credit card to bankroll several trips to the marshy coast. He took samples of the water and collected research subjects.
That is a Gulf killifish, Fungulus grandis.
His lab tanks are full of the shiny little fish. How they reproduce long term could say a lot about the spill.
The limiting factor is not getting the fish, it's getting the oil.
Whitehead's been asking for 20 gallons of light sweet crude from BP for 8 months. BP did give oil to some labs, but then came an order from a federal judge, says BP lawyer Nathan Block. It said preserve all tangible evidence.
Which, of course, obviously, oil fell under the definition of tangible things.
Captured oil went into airtight stainless steel containers that had to be refrigerated in a safe place.
So it has taken a while, a fair amount of effort, and several million dollars to get that infrastructure set up.
Block says opening the containers too many times for samples could compromise the evidence. As an alternative, BP just identified another oil well that's chemically close to the oil spilled last year. Professor Andrew Whitehead said he'd take 20 gallons of that and got a letter saying,
"It's going to take 8 weeks to ship me the oil, and that's disabling."
Because his research is up for review this summer. Normally, he'd have preliminary findings to lock in more funding. It looks like he'll have nothing to show.
My ability to hire people to do the work, to pay students, to pay technicians is delayed.
He says there are also delays dispensing the $500 million that BP set aside for research. That means some scientists will simply have to switch gears.
Labs are going to move on. A lot of good research is not going to get done.
I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
There's a new study out this week that says a lot of people want to buy environmentally friendly products, but about two-thirds of them don't follow through. Marketplace's Jennifer Collins tells us why.
Here's one big reason. 4 out of 5 guys said green is just plain girly.
They would start to get really sheepish.
Grace Ann Bennett co-authored the Ogilvy Earth Report.
And kind of uncomfortable when they talked about things like even carrying a reusable grocery bag.
A little too much like a purse, apparently. And then there are the car ads, like this one featuring a guy and a polar bear hugging.
The 100% electric Nissan Leaf.
The marketers may have themselves a little bit to blame on this one.
Dave Almy tracks green marketing with ADC Partners.
There has been an aggressive pursuit for female heads of household.
Bennett says marketers have been preaching to the choir, and millions of Americans aren't in that choir. If two-thirds of the population joined, it might quadruple the green market. Bennett says to appeal to men, advertisers need to push value, utility, and maybe even a little humor.
Chevrolet Volt is a big step up from the leaf blower.
I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
And finally, Jeremy, next time you eye that soft hotel towel to take with you at checkout time, you may want to think twice. I know you stayed in Vegas last weekend,
I was
right?
in Vegas, yes,
there?
Indeed. At a terrible hotel, I might add,
okay,
but I won't mention the name.
Please don't do that. We're not going to mention names in this program. Fed up with high cotton prices and losing up to 20% of their towels a month. I didn't realize that so many towels disappear. Some hotels are now embedding their towels and linens with tracking chips.
Really?
Yes. So think about that the next time you're drying your body off after the shower, that there's a tracking chip somewhere in that
fantastic.
Towel as well.
That's great.
Oops. Ow! Which those tracking chips, by the way, trigger an alarm when a guest tries to exit with one of those towels. So if you slip it in your purse or you slip a towel into your suitcase, the alarm goes off when you try and take it out the front door.
Seems like a lot of trouble for a, $8 towel or whatever
if
it is.
That much, yeah.
Right.
Think you're embarrassed by the incidental charges from the minibar, right, when you had the $5 can of peanuts? Imagine the valet asking you to open your suitcase before you get in your car.
That would definitely be embarrassing. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.